You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK. The NFL Podcast with Gil Alexander and Dave Kelner.
Week two in the National Football League. Dave Kelner here in the UK, ready to talk to Gil Alexander stateside ahead of the televised games in the UK this weekend. We have the Bengals at the Steelers, the Seahawks at the Rams, the Packers at the Vikings, and the Eagles at the Bears. First of all, a warm welcome to fellow podcaster Gil Alexander stateside. Gil, talking to us live from Idaho on this Friday afternoon. First of all, good afternoon, or good morning to you, Gil.
Good morning to me, good afternoon to you, or good evening to you.
That's it, Gil. Idaho, I get to talk to you in every different part of the land, it seems, every single season, Gil.
This is a new one for us, isn't it? Yeah, it's for those who don't know, it's in the upper northwest part of the country. It's a beautiful part of the country, rolling hills. I'm looking out at rolling hills right now. We desperately are trying to get ourselves a signal. So let's do this while we have one.
Did you manage to catch any of the game last night, Gil? The Jets eventually beating the Bills 37 points to 31. And things are going to be tough for Rex Ryan's team now. He clearly trusts his cornerbacks, but they got torched last night. And he's got Arizona and New England on the horizon as well, so it's a difficult spell for the Bills.
Rex isn't going to make it through the season, Dave. He's just not going to make it through the season. And I think there's a lot of teams like that that face 0-2 in the face. But as you mentioned, in Rex's case, I don't think his bravado helps him in these moments when, you know, maybe if he was a little more of a docile guy, but, you know, there's a lot of pomp with him and 0-4 staring him in the face, and they won't tolerate that in Buffalo.
No, and I couldn't believe how high scoring it was, Gil.
Yeah, listen, especially with what we saw from the Jets pass rush against Cincinnati last week, right? But Buffalo was able to make a couple really big plays. That, you know, the final score was 37-31. That felt more dominant than that, to be truthful. It felt like the Jets really did move the ball at will against the Bills. And, you know, those Thursday games are always squirrely, so it's tough to really read into them, but not a good result for Buffalo.
Let's get stuck into this weekend then, Gil, and we'll start with the Cincinnati Bengals at the Pittsburgh Steelers. On the money line, the Bengals 8-5 here with William Hill. The Steelers are 5-9, and this spread is set at 3. The Bengals plus 3 at even money. The Steelers minus 3 with extra juice here at 5-6, a massive matchup this early on in the season in the AFC North, Gil. And are both teams coming into this 1-0 after week one, but both made the journey slightly differently here. The Bengals beat the Jets by a point in a game in which Andy Dalton was put under immense pressure, while the Steelers, I don't want to use the term ran riot, Gil, against your Washington Redskins.
Thanks so much.
Every single week I get you on this podcast, Gil, and unfortunately the first 2 weeks we've had to chat about Washington and it's not been positive.
Yeah, well, you know, that's one thing I got right last week. It's something about being a fan of your own team. I don't know if you have this with the Premier League. If you know your team so well, you know when they typically come out and play well, and you just know the matchups that hurt them. And as a Redskin fan, I was saying on my podcast, and if not on yours as well, how I didn't think the Redskins were going to perform well at all against Pittsburgh, and they got blown out. Cincinnati, as you mentioned, a one-point win. They escaped with a one-point win against the Jets, largely because the Jets decided to kick field goals in moments when they could have gone for it on fourth down and tried to punch it in the end zone. So, and the Jets sacked Andy Dalton, as we mentioned, 7 times. So the Bengals were fortunate to get away with the one-point win. And by the way, just a shout-out to the NFL in general. That was one of 5 one-point outcomes last week in week one. There was also 2 2-point outcomes. There would have been a third had the Colts not taken a meaningless safety at the end. And then there was a game that went to overtime, not to mention. So over half the schedule last week was just unbelievable in terms of the competitiveness, if not great football. Cincinnati was one of those one-point wins. You're right, this is a big division game already in week two for two teams that really do hate each other. We always talk about, we often talk about teams where there's no love lost between them. But these two teams, it's reality. The last three matchups between them, all last year, more than $200,000 in player fines. Not sure what that converts to in euros, Dave.
Wow.
That's a lot of money for player fines. Social media feuds between them, concussions, injuries that have kept players out. D'Angelo Williams traded Twitter barbs with linebacker Vontaze Burfict. Who doesn't like a good Twitter feud, Dave, between two football teams? And Burfict, by the way, serving a three-game suspension, so he won't play in this game. A pattern of egregious hits, many inflicted on these Steelers. So they hate each other, and that should be fun to watch from a fan perspective, that's for sure.
Internet handbags, Gil. Internet handbags all over the place.
I love that.
Even without Le'Veon Bell and Martavis Bryant, the Steelers have shown they can still put up points. Last week they did against the Redskins with Antonio Brown and D'Angelo Williams starring in that win. He also showed Roethlisberger that he can find some of the secondary receivers in Eli Rogers, Sammy Coates and Jesse James. They also contributed in that win. Will it be as easy to put up points against the Cincinnati Bengals?
I mean, nothing can be as easy as it was last week, you wouldn't think. But that's not saying much, I guess, against the Redskins defense that made no sense in having their big free agent pickup, Josh Norman, not cover Antonio Brown most of the night. So Brown was able to run roughshod all through the Skins defense. You would think that the Bengals would try something a little different than not putting their best cover man on Antonio Brown. But you're right. No Le'Veon Bell, no Roosevelt Nix, the fullback, no Ladarius Green, their tight end, no Marcus Wheaton, the wide receiver for the Steelers. In instead, D'Angelo Williams, Eli Rogers, Sammy Coates, Jesse James, and they all filled in admirably. They were great. And those guys, along with Big Ben and Brown, Antonio Brown, helped the Steelers gain 447 total yards last week, 38-16 win. And listen, watching that game last week, you are struck by the fact that Big Ben and Antonio Brown are Hall of Famers, right? They're future Hall of Fame players. And as a Redskins fan, you look at a team like the Redskins and you realize we have none of them, right? We have no Hall of Fame players. And ultimately, Big Ben and Antonio Brown are just pros beyond pros. And so the Bengals, on the other side of the ball, actually have more problems than having to deal with Big Ben and Antonio Brown. They got a lot of offensive line issues, as we mentioned from last week, giving up the 7 sacks. You do wonder if that was just more the Jets' great D play, defensive line play, than it was the Bengals having a poor offensive line, but we'll find that out this week. The one thing that the Steelers weren't able to do against Kirk Cousins was generate a pass rush.
Yeah.
So that is one thing that the Bengals can sort of hang their hat on and hope stays consistent this coming week.
And that's why this game to me, Gil, feels like a shootout. It feels like it's going to be high scoring.
It does. I would agree with that. I don't see it being a defensive struggle. Big Ben and Dalton, they're going to put up points. A.J. Green, by the way, for Dalton last week was up against Darrell Revis, supposedly, the shutdown corner of his generation. He's a little advanced in years now. But A.J. Green just crushed Darrell Revis. 12 catches on the day, all kinds of yards, got in the end zone. So there's no reason to believe A.J. Green can't do the same here against the Steelers secondary. Should be a shootout. I think the spread is about right at 3 points. That's what it ought to be in a division rivalry game like this in favor of the home team. It's hung up there. It's probably not going to move on that too much. And that's the kind of game you're going to get.
The Cincinnati Bengals at the Pittsburgh Steelers, then 8-5 the Bengals, the Steelers at 5-9, the Bengals +3 even money, with the Steelers -3 at 5-6, and I'll be looking at the over 48.5 points there at 10-11. Let's check out the Seattle Seahawks at the LA Rams. This is an NFC West clash, and the Seahawks are 1-3, the Rams 5-2. The Seahawks giving up 7 points on the spread at even money. The Rams +7 with a little extra juice here at 5-6. Has there been any line movement in this one, first of all, Gil?
Well, it's strange to ask that question because the line really wasn't posted widespread for a while. And you saw some stray books hang up a 3.5, but that was just one book somewhere. And you know, not most people couldn't get in on it if they didn't have an account there, if they didn't have access to it. But really, when the line was posted widespread, now it is close to a touchdown, if not a touchdown across the board, 6.5, as you say. That's a lot of points in this matchup, Dave. This is the first ever game at Los Angeles Memorial Coliseum, not first ever, but first ever in this reincarnation of the LA Rams. The Rams could not have looked worse against the 49ers on Monday night, which is, of course, why this spread is what it is. And when I say could not have looked worse, that was virtually unwatchable. I don't know if you tried to watch that, Dave. Did you get a glimpse of that?
I saw the highlights, Gil, and it was incredible because when we talked about the matchup last week, I said to you the San Francisco 49ers might just end up being the worst team in the National Football League.
And watching, I agreed.
And watching that game, it's tough to see how the LA Rams could possibly win in the NFL, but we know that this is the in betting terms, it's the overreaction week where you sometimes get more points than you're expecting given the reaction from the bookmakers to week number one. And maybe that's what we've got here, Gil.
Well, you know, my buddy who's on my podcast, American handicapper Marco D'Angelo, his big phrase is no team is as good as they look one week, no team is as bad as they look one week. The Rams certainly will put that to the test after what we saw last week. But the Rams swept the Seahawks last year. Even not being a good football team, they managed to sweep the Seahawks. There's something about that Rams defense. And please pay no mind to what you saw about the Rams defense last week. Just throw that out of your mind and think about what the Rams defense was last year. They've still got Aaron Donald back there, and now he's paired with Robert Quinn. While they looked terrible against the Niners, the Seahawks offensive line is a mess, and they were a mess all last year, and it was really the brilliance of Russell Wilson that overcame that. They're still a mess, and this is just a matchup problem for the Seahawks. Now, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that the Rams are going to win this outright, but 6.5 points is a lot of points to give the Rams in this. And I think it's because not only do you have the banged up offensive line or just a really small offensive line in Seattle, but you've got banged up Russell Wilson now. Russell Wilson in the Seahawks just getting by squeak by win over the Dolphins last week, 12-10, one of those 2-point outcomes we talked about where the Seahawks only scored late. He got his ankle stepped on by Ndamukong Suh of the Dolphins. There are reports that Russell Wilson, the first four nights of this week, slept a grand total of 6 hours.
Wow.
90 minutes a night so that he could ice his ankle, so that he could wake up and ice his ankle. I'm not really quite sure why, Dave, there's not a contraption where he can actually sleep and have his ankle iced. That's for you to figure out, but that's one report. So it's just a good matchup on that side of the ball for the Rams. I'm not going to tell you the Rams are going to score a lot of points, but it could be a really low-scoring, grinded-out game, just like the Seahawks were involved in last week.
What I find strange, Gil, hopefully you can enlighten me about this, is that they got beaten 28-0 last week, looked terrible in prime time, and then coach Jeff Fisher for the Rams was handed a new 3-year contract or contract extension. His contract runs out at the end of the season, getting paid $7 million a year, Gil, in the NFL, and he's yet to post a winning record in four seasons at the Rams as well. That seems backward to me. It just seems weird.
He is a Houdini. There's never been a case like this where a guy has parlayed mediocrity, consistent perennial mediocrity, into contract after contract. Now, I wonder in the case of the Rams being in LA for the first season, coming from St. Louis, if there's some desire to maintain continuity or whatever the reason is, and the owner Stan Kroenke just loves Jeff Fisher, whatever it is. Jeff Fisher got one team to the Super Bowl, the Tennessee Titans, when he coached there, and that took a miracle in the playoffs to get him there as well. Other than that one season, and he's been a coach for the better part of two decades now at this point, I believe, he has just been a 8-8, 7-9 kind of machine. So your confusion is shared by everybody here stateside, or most people stateside, why this guy keeps getting contract after contract.
The only perhaps reason for it is that the Rams have had notoriously difficult schedules the last three or four seasons, at least. They've been going up against some of the best teams in the NFL, and maybe that's how he's managed to wangle a new contract, Gil.
Maybe. I mean, look, they're in the division with the Seahawks and the Cardinals, so they play those two teams twice each every season. But the irony is that they've fared very well or very competitively against both the Seahawks and Cardinals. I think they're 4-4 over the last couple seasons against both combined, if I'm not mistaken. Or at least over the last, since 2012, I should say. I think they're 4-4 straight up against each Seattle and Arizona. So, you know, they fare well against good competition. They play down to bad competition. I'm not so sure that makes a good coach in the end after years. Mm. Certainly other people aren't afforded that kind of opportunity.
Just before we leave this matchup, Gil, I know you're going with the Rams +7 here with William Hill right now, so it is up to a touchdown at 5-6. Who do you think will play at quarterback for the LA Rams?
I think it's Case Keenum this week again, which is just horrific to think about after what we saw last week. But, you know, they're number one pick in the draft. They trade, you know, Jared Goff from Cal. They made him the number one pick in the NFL draft. He didn't even suit him up for week one. So, you know, a lot of people are speculating, wow, how bad must Jared Goff be if Case Keenum is that bad? So we don't even know if he'll suit up Jared Goff. If he does, he'll probably make Jared Goff the number two quarterback this week. And we'll see Jared Goff starting yet. You would have to think by week 4 or 5, just from a fan's perspective, just to appease the fans in LA. But if we get another game like that from Case Keenum, it'll be sooner than later.
And there's a suggestion that Jeff Fisher didn't even want Jared Goff, which makes the contract extension even more strange.
That would make it strange. I mean, who knows? By the way, I should also mention, Dave, before we get off this game, there are two stats for the Seattle Seahawks. I don't think I mentioned it on your show last week, but these have nothing to do with betting. Just they're so amazing, these two stats, and they're not widely thrown around, that I think people ought to know about the greatness of the Seattle Seahawks over time and how Russell Wilson has just kept this together. The Seahawks have led or been within one score in the fourth quarter of 89 consecutive games, including the playoffs. 89 consecutive games. That's the longest streak in NFL history. And they've also held a lead at some point in the first 71 games of Russell Wilson's career. That's another NFL record. So think about every time they take the field, there are these two amazing streaks on the line. And I never hear them get mentioned, but those are in fact the case. So always fun to watch the Seahawks in those streaks.
I suppose that makes them a good team to, obviously we're not with them this week, Gil, but that makes them a good team to bet on, because you're always in with a shot going into the fourth quarter.
Yeah, I mean, look, and remember in the playoffs, that streak was held alive. They were down 31-0, and they scored 24 unanswered to keep both of those streaks alive. At least the second one hadn't do with the playoffs, I think. The second one is just a regular season record, but really amazing. This is a little strange for me, because what the spread is now, I really like the Rams. What was offered in the Super Contest in America was a different stale line, the one that I mentioned earlier in the week, which was only Seattle 4.5. So as a game theory kind of thing, I almost have to take Seattle in that. But in real life, I would not lay 6.5 points here. No way.
On to the Packers at the Vikings. The Green Bay Packers at the Minnesota Vikings is the Sunday night game, early Monday morning here in the UK at 1:30. The Packers are 20-27 on the money line. The Vikings are 23-20. And the spread is set at 2.5. The Packers -2.5 at 10-11. The Vikings +2.5 at 10-11. We talk about this being a quarterback league, Gil. And right now we're not 100% sure who's going to start at quarterback for the Vikings. Although we've got more than an inkling that it's going to be Sam Bradford. And they paid a heavy price for Bradford as well, the Minnesota Vikings. He cost the franchise a first-round pick in 2017 and a fourth-round pick in 2018, and that's before even mentioning the salary. So I suppose it was only going to be a matter of time without Teddy Bridgewater that Bradford stepped into his shoes.
Well, they wouldn't have traded for Bradford had Bridgewater not got hurt. So, you know, it was kind of a domino effect. Bridgewater goes down with the injuries. They end up, you know, having to deal with their backup, Sean Hill. They obviously didn't feel comfortable with Sean Hill. They make this very rash trade for Sam Bradford, who, in essence, Dave, is the Jeff Fisher of professional quarterbacks. He keeps getting contracts for being mediocre. And listen, the Vikings have such a lack of knowledge, it seems, of their own recent history to have made a trade like that, because it essentially doesn't matter who's playing quarterback for the Vikings. You know, their head coach, Mike Zimmer, made such a big deal this week about keeping that tight, close to the vest. You know, is it going to be Sean Hill or Sam Bradford? He said, listen, there was a leak last week about it, so I don't know if I'm going to mention it this week to prevent that leak. And basically, probably the Packers are sitting there laughing like, we really care who your quarterback is, because we know you're going to give the ball to Adrian Peterson. We know that's your goal. And in fact, the Vikings gave the ball to Peterson, at least on first downs last week, at a historically high percentage rate of the time, a very predictable offense. And it ended up putting Bridgewater in tight situations in the third down. They really did their young quarterback no favors. So now, listen, this is a team that in 2012 made the playoffs again with Christian Ponder as their quarterback. Christian Ponder made 16 starts that year, and the Vikings got to the playoffs. Why? Not because of Ponder, but because Peterson was so dominant on offense. So it doesn't matter if it's Bradford or Hill here. It's just going to be the same Vikings identity. First game in their new stadium, U.S. Bank Stadium. They played 32 seasons indoors. Then they had 2 years of transition outdoors at the University of Minnesota. Now they're back indoors. It's going to be a huge crowd there, big environment, going to be a raucous crowd. And the Vikings are 2.5-point underdogs. Again, not knowing Hill or Bradford, and the public is thinking, oh, I don't know, they don't even know their quarterback. I love the Vikings in this spot. I think the market is begging for Packers money at that number that's below 3. And as we mentioned last week, the Packers have all kinds of trouble on the road. So I like the Vikings in this NFC North matchup.
And being back indoors is a big factor for the Minnesota Vikings. I think I read somewhere, Gil, that they've got the best ever winning percentage indoors. So do you see that as something that is worth hanging your hat on this week?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if that, you know, that's one of those historical stats. You're right, that is the case. Their winning percentage indoors tops in NFL history. It's a 6-15 winning percentage. That's great. I don't know if that translates to anything moving forward. I don't know if there's any predictive quality to that. But listen, this is a team that last year was 14-3 against the spread. The Vikings were 14-3 against the spread. There's only been one instance when a team has bested the market by a better rate, and that was the 2004 Chargers that were 13-2-2 against the spread. But you have to go back 11 years prior to get that team. Last week, Vikings managed to do it again. How did they do it? The Titans said, we're going to stop Adrian Peterson. They did. Sean Hill, you'll have to beat us. He didn't, but the Vikings defense came through with two defensive touchdowns. And look, you're not going to expect the Vikings to score every week, especially not against a guy like Aaron Rodgers. But the Vikings held their opponents last year to 20 or fewer points in 12 games last season. That's the recipe. Great defensive play, Adrian Peterson on offense. They turn around last week. Not only do they hold the Titans to less than 20 points, but they get the two scores. So that's their recipe. That's their identity. And as we mentioned last week, the Packers were outgained on the road last year by 58 yards per game on the road. Last week against Jacksonville, they won, but they didn't cover, and they almost, you know, Jacksonville had a chance to win on the last drive. Once again, Green Bay outgained by 54 yards on the road. So you have some sort of patterns with both of these teams that there's no reason to believe won't hold true this coming Sunday night stateside. And Aaron Rodgers last year against the Vikings, they held him below a passer rating of 90. It's sort of a freaky little scale we have here with passer rating, but just trust me, that's not good.
The Minnesota Vikings, the pick, Gil's pick, plus 2.5 in the Sunday night game. Let's talk Monday night football now. Early hours of Tuesday morning here in the UK. The Philadelphia Eagles are making the trip to Chicago to take on the Bears, and the Eagles are 8-5 to win on the money line. The Bears are 5-9, and this spread is set at 3 right now. The Eagles plus 3 at even money. The Bears minus 3 with the extra juice at 5-6. Been an unbelievable week for the Philadelphia Eagles, Gil. What a difference a week does make. Last time we spoke, we were questioning Carson Wentz and how that was going to materialize, the second overall pick out of North Dakota State. And he's now leading the Eagles into primetime with a near-perfect display against the Cleveland Browns in that 29-10 win in week number one. And I read that the jersey with his name on the back of it is now number one in NFL online sales. They call it overreaction week from the betting perspective, but maybe the press and the general public, Gil, get caught up in it too.
That's exactly what I said on my podcast. I could talk about an overreaction. Carson Wentz, the number one online jersey sale. I mean, come on. They played the Cleveland Browns. So I don't know that we know anything about the Eagles after week one. I mean, the ultimate overreaction, I mentioned this as well for your audience, our president and vice president, our outgoing executive office had stuff to say about that game. Vice President Joe Biden, who's from Delaware, right next to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, he told Barack Obama, get on the Wentz wagon. And Obama, who's from Chicago, an ardent Bears fan, he joked that he'd visit Philly and scout out what all the fuss is about. So when the president and vice president get involved after Carson Wentz played one game, I mean, it is ridiculous. They, of course, so happen to be from that region. But yeah, it, you know, good for the Eagles. I mentioned on my show, hopefully I did on yours as well, that that's the one game till week 10 that the Eagles were going to be favored last week. So starting this week, they won't be favored again for months, literally a couple months. And they're 3-point dogs here against the Bears. You know, the Bears, on the other hand, look, we talk about the Bears a lot over the years on this show, Dave, and we keep coming back to the fact that Jake Cutler is just a menace to himself, right? The coaching staff of the Bears has to figure out a way to protect Jay Cutler from his own flaws. And they don't have Adam Gase there anymore. Adam Gase is gone, their offensive coordinator from last year. Matt Forte is a security blanket, who we saw do so well with the Jets last night. What a loss that is for the Bears. But Jay Cutler does have Alshon Jeffrey. And I think Alshon Jeffrey is one of these names that most non-diehard football fans still don't know yet. But if Robert Griffin III was able to complete a couple long balls on the Eagles last year, basically by throwing the ball up in the air and getting a jump ball, I think Alshon Jeffrey is poised for a huge game against the Eagles on Monday night. And I ultimately think that's going to lead the Bears to victory.
And they've got Kevin White, haven't they, as well, who was a first rounder in 2015 in the draft, but was absent last year. And he didn't perform maybe to expectation last week, Gil, but it was noticeable in Cutler's press conferences after that match that he was quite protective of Kevin White, and they clearly expect big things from him, so he could complement Alshon Jeffery as well in this matchup.
Yeah, he missed his entire rookie season, did Kevin White, with a stress fracture last week, caught only 3 passes for 34 yards despite being targeted 7 times. Yeah, I think both he and Alshon Jeffery are going to have big games with Jay Cutler. Keep in mind, in the Eagles' secondary, cornerback Leotis McKelvin has a strained left hamstring. He strained it in week one last week. So, you know, that's not going to help the Eagles' cause either on that side of the ball. And I think the Bears match up quite well with these Eagles teams. Listen, I think a lot of teams match up well with the Eagles. Also doesn't help the Eagles that Zach Ertz, their tight end, is out with a shoulder injury from last week. So Brent Celek's going to be in. And by the way, that's going to last for an extended period of time. So Ertz will be out for a while. By the way, the greatest fantasy football name that I've ever heard, or since Zach Ertz has entered the league, and I hope that this will be allowed on your podcast, but someone in my league had the name My Ball Zach Ertz. That was his team name. So you might have to edit that.
No, I'll leave that one in, Gil. I've seen a few of those, in fact, actually, in the league that I play in as well. So, yeah, Zach Ertz is just
the humor. Oh, the humor of fantasy football. So, yeah, look, I think the Bears set up nicely here. I do think that the Eagles, without Chip Kelly now and with Doug Peterson as their head coach, Frank Reich as their offensive coordinator, that's going to be the opposite tempo of Chip Kelly. It'll be, you know, slow down football. But against a Bears defense that last week, really the game against the Texans, the Bears led at the half and then they got blown away in the second half. But Houston converted 12 of 20 third down opportunities against the Bears. So the key for the Bears is changing that stat. Mm. And third down opportunities mask, I think, a lot of what we see with our naked eye that we're not able to process watching a football game. I don't think we realize, unless we check the stat sheet, okay, what really happened in this game? And what really happened last week is that they couldn't get the Texans offense off the field at the most critical times. That's not something that's necessarily, you know, sustains itself from week to week. And I think the Bears will get the Eagles and Carson Wentz off the field. And I think the Bears will win this.
The Bears minus three at 5-6 is Gil's pick. And that brings us nicely to the pick six this week, Gil. It's the bet here with William Hill. If you place an NFL accumulator bet of six or more selections on either the money line, the match spread, or points total market, and if one pick lets you down, you get your stake back as a free bet. So every week on the podcast, Gil, you'll be giving us your pick six.
My pick six. And I'll tell you what, I usually, what I do on this is I give you my five super contest picks, and then we throw in a sixth. It's a little trickier this week because they told you about that quirk with the Seattle game.
Yes.
So my super contest pick on Seattle is more of a game theory thing. It's not exactly what the spread is now. So we'll throw that game out for in terms of my super contest. Forget about that. But in terms of real life, I will actually go with the Rams as my first pick. Not necessarily number one in terms of confidence, but I like the Rams. Getting 6.5 right now at home against Seattle for all the reasons we mentioned. Again, big defense matches up well against that weak Seattle offensive line. Not saying they're going to win it outright, but if you're giving me all those points, I will take the Rams despite how bad they looked last week. Pick number two, also Sunday afternoon, Arizona giving about 6.5 or 7 right now to the Buccaneers. It's an interesting line because 1 week ago today, before we knew that Rob Gronkowski would be out, and when that line on the Cardinals went from 6.5 to about 9.5. Before we knew that, and it was at 6.5, I thought we think to ourselves, okay, well, Arizona's giving 6.5 against a Bill Belichick coach team, no matter how depleted that Belichick coach team was. 1 week later, the market reacts, and they see Arizona lose to a depleted New England team, and this is only 6.5 against the Bucs. I love the Cardinals here. I'll give those points away. The Cardinals are a great football team who just had one bad week against a Hall of Fame coach. They're going to roll the Bucs here. I love Arizona giving 6.5 at home, where Bruce Arians has just been phenomenal. Bruce Arians has been phenomenal overall with the Cardinals, but I'll happily give the 6.5. The ultimate spread of recency bias in the NFL. I'll take the Cardinals here giving 6.5. Pick number three, let us go to the Miami Dolphins at the New England Patriots. Miami's getting 6.5 here against the Patriots. Again, Miami looked great against Seattle. New England looked, even in defeat, by the way, they just refused to win that game at Seattle, covered easily. New England, everybody's just loving the Patriots. Wow, they went into Arizona with a depleted team. No Brady, no Gronk, no Ninkovich, banged up offensive line, and they beat the Cardinals outright. But you're giving the Dolphins 6.5 in a division game. I will take the Dolphins. I'll take those points at New England. I know it's counterintuitive, but again, this is overreaction week. No team is as good as they look. No team is as bad as they look. I like the Dolphins getting 6.5. Pick number four. I just bashed the Cleveland Browns. Guess who I'm taking with the points? Cleveland at home getting 6.5 against the Baltimore Ravens. Baltimore shouldn't be favored by 6.5 over anybody, Dave. Over anybody. And Cleveland, in going from Robert Griffin III now, who, God rest his soul, God rest his career, poor Robert Griffin III. Josh McCown is in instead of Robert Griffin III. I think the Browns are better with McCown. I'll take the 6.5 or 6 or whatever it's playing right now across the board. I'll take the Browns. What are we up to? Pick number five?
That's it.
The two we mentioned. I'll take Minnesota getting 2.5 at home against Green Bay for all the reasons stated, and I'll take Chicago giving 3 at home against Philly. So those will round out the pick six for the week.
Superb. Thank you, Gil. It's always an immense pleasure chatting to you on a Friday afternoon here in the UK. If you're not au fait with Gil's podcast, the Megapod and the Guessing the Lines podcast, as far as the NFL are concerned, are out now. So check those podcasts out at Beating the Book on Twitter. And you can follow myself at D Kellner. And Gil, good luck with your picks this week. And let's hope it's a successful week 2. And we'll catch up ahead of week number 3.
You too, Dave. I'll try to do this in every single state for the next 17 weeks. And then next year, another 17 states.
We'll have the whole country done by the time we get to the 2020, Gil, hopefully.
Appreciate you having me as always, man. Good luck.
Get a £5 free bet every week with Offer Club from William Hill.
Hey-o, let's go, let's go.
Simply stake a total of £20 or more across the week on pre-match football accumulators with four or more selections, and you'll get a £5 free bet on the Friday. Plus, you can get on faster and easier than ever with our new and improved mobile betting experience. Join William Hill Offer Club on mobile or online now. When the fun stops, stop.